Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Hey, welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is All Ball, where we have some deep dive conversations with some great coaches, players, friends, fans, all kinds of different stuff. I wanted to take a little bit of a detour from some of the NBA, some of the D1 college basketball talking, and bring in Elliot Steinmetz, who is the head coach of Yeshiva University in New York. Now, if you know anything about the Maccabees, who's, of course, their mascot of Yeshiva, you know this is a big-time D3 program. Big time. Matter of fact, before the COVID shutdown, they were one of the favorites to win the Division III national championship. But for a long time, it was just kind of a, you know, a nondescript school known more for being orthodox and a home for rabbinical studies than it was some wellspring of basketball talent. How did we get from there to here? And you want us to find something interesting? How about their coach, who's a really good coach? And I've heard him on other podcasts talk about how they run motion, right? It's like the lost art of motion basketball. I want to have him back on at some point to talk motion basketball. But how about the fact that he's not a full-time coach? No, he has another job. And then he coaches. How you do it, I don't know. But also the fact that he does it and does it at a super, super high level is even more impressive. So let me introduce you to the head coach of a team that had won. They're 14-1 the season. He is at this point in time, the time of the recording of this podcast, he personally is shut down because of COVID. Of course, his team is not playing until the end of the month. He'll talk about the break and as why it has nothing to do with COVID. But let's catch up with the head coach of the Yeshiva University, Elliot Steinmetz.
Okay, so let's start. Right now, you're speaking to me from where?
I'm home, actually, in my house in Long Island.
Okay, so you're in Long Island. We're in Long Island. I'm not stalking you. There's that one time.
No, it's okay. Woodmere, New York.
So you're in Woodmere. Okay, so yeah. Five towns, right?
Five towns.
My dad actually lived in Hewlett.
Right around the corner.
Sure. So you have COVID. How bad are your symptoms?
Not bad at all. I literally have like a little cough and that's it.
Yeah. Are you vaccinated?
Yeah, I actually got the booster 2 days ago also.
You got the two booster and then you got infected?
That's how it goes these days.
What has this been like for you? I mean, for people who we kind of sold it in the open, like you guys are 14-1. You've built something really remarkable, but you know, you're in the midst of now you have some of your best teams and we're in these crazy times when you're shut down. Now teams are shut down. What's that been like?
So it's kind of been an interesting couple of years like that. I mean, we were in the Sweet 16 2 years ago, first time in school history that we won an NCAA tournament game. And then obviously it gets shut down and, you know, we had 129 in a row. We were playing probably the best ball I've ever had a team play, in my years coaching. Last year, obviously, it was a shortened season and D2, and I don't remember if D2 had a championship. D3 never really got off the ground in terms of having a championship last year. So we were playing from the beginning of the year, kind of knowing it was going to be just playing a bunch of games and no playoffs or championship at the end. And we got 7 games in before things got shut down. This year, we've actually managed to make it through, obviously, the first 15, which was cool. You know, now we're actually on a break anyway, because it's finals and it's, We have a different break at Yeshiva. So we have finals now, and then we go into our winter break, and we don't play again until the 26th. So, you know, I see what's going on all around, and I'm kind of starting to talk to other coaches and, you know, see who's going to want to play if games start to get canceled out.
What happened with Illinois Wesleyan? You guys are 14-0. You're undefeated. You got a winning streak. What happened?
I think we, you know, ran into, first of all, a really, really good team playing really well on that night for sure. You know, people talk about our strength of schedule and, you know, some of the, you know, I guess the preparation going into that game, in terms of our guys, you know, mentally being ready to play against a powerhouse like that from the Midwest. I think from a talent perspective, we're right there. I think from a preparation and a physicality perspective, we have a lot to learn and a lot to grow from that game. I think that game probably served its purpose in a big way, and I hope we'll be able to turn around in March and say that. But when we schedule those games, we schedule them because we want to be better in March. You know, we wanted to win the game. Don't get me wrong. I want to win every game we play. I'm not a believer in you got to lose one to relieve the pressure. That's not what I believe in. But, you know, sometimes you need to get punched in the mouth, and we got punched in the mouth, and hopefully it makes us better in March.
Yeah, also you didn't hit three in the first half. You guys shot dreadfully in the first half in terms of jump shots. And then
we did a lot of that had to do with their defense, obviously, also. But no, we didn't make shots, and you know, we didn't execute offensively or defensively in the first half much.
What is life like at this level in terms of, let's just say, first travel? You're going to go to, when you go and play at you mentioned a powerhouse, right? Illinois Wesleyan. Where is Illinois Wesleyan?
It's outside Chicago. I think it's about an hour or two from Chicago.
So you guys, what, have to go to, do you guys go to LaGuardia or JFK and then go to Chicago? I mean, you guys aren't chartering.
So we're actually not going there this year. We go back there next year. They're not a conference team.
This was at home?
This was by us.
So did you play a home game or did you play a neutral game?
No, this was at home.
Okay. So, but when you, let's just say when you go on these trips, you know, like you're envisioning like Bull Durham, right? Like you go from planes to buses. Are you a bus guy or do you do a rental van? Do you do the vans? What do you do?
So most of our games are somewhat local. They're all busable. So most of our games, guys are getting on a bus. And, you know, if it's a longer trip, then it's a coach bus. If it's not, it could be anything from, you know, a sprinter to a school bus. When we actually travel, a couple of years ago, we went to LA, you know, obviously then we're getting on a plane and then, you know, renting a couple of vans and driving around. Definitely not luxurious, but we make it work.
Your background, was coaching Yeshiva always something you wanted to do?
Coaching at the college level, I think, was something I always wanted to do. I was coaching at Jewish high schools from the time I was probably like 23. And I had some success doing it, and I really enjoyed just kind of being in that world. It's a world I'm familiar with, obviously. I played in that world in high school. I played at Yeshiva. So, you know, it was a natural fit once the job opened up to kind of go and apply for it. You know, I wouldn't call it a dream, but it was something I always, you know, definitely looked forward to.
Who was your coach when you played Yeshiva?
Jonathan Halpert.
What was your experience like?
It was really good. I enjoyed it a lot. I mean, he was a great mentor to me. He was somebody, he was coaching there for about 42 years. He really put that program on the map in the first place and, you know, brought us into the Skyline Conference. My first year playing for him was our first year in the conference. So he really brought that program kind of from, you know, an unknown into the picture. And then, you know, I've been lucky enough to have the opportunity to try to bring it forward a little bit.
What did he do specifically that you thought like really helped in terms of the prominence?
I think it was the way he ran the program. I think it was the way he treated people in general. You know, players respected him, coaches around respected him, officials respected him, and we were putting out a team every night that was competing hard that teams had to prepare for.
Always American Jews, or do you ever have Israelis?
No, we have a mix. I have a couple of Israelis now playing for me. I had when I was playing there, a couple of my teammates were Israeli. We've had guys from different countries in general. I think we've had guys from South America in the past as well.
Are all now, what percentage of players are Jewish?
On the undergrad is just about, I think the undergrad is 100% Jewish. You know, obviously the grad schools are not. Currently the team, every player on the team currently is Jewish.
Have you coached a non-Jewish player?
No, I don't think I have.
Now, are there guys that have come that are like Jew-ish, right? And they're you almost have to teach them what all the customs are, what the holidays are, what the, you know, what the kosher things are. How often does that happen?
So that's pretty often. I would say, you know, it's funny to say there's diversity on the team when the whole team is obviously Jewish, but within the context of that, of, you know, of religion, we have guys from all ends of the religious spectrum. We have, you know, we had guys a couple years ago who were studying to be rabbis, who were kind of on that, you know, very right end of the religious spectrum. And we have guys with tattoos and earrings who are coming from a completely different background that have no, you know, that are not observant and are not, you know, keeping the Sabbath and eating kosher and stuff like that. And we've kind of, you know, brought it in and combined it into kind of one big happy family.
So when you guys travel, I remember when I was at Notre Dame, I wasn't the only Jewish athlete in Notre Dame. We had Mike Kopka, I think, was the kicker, and Jesse Rosenthal was starting left tackle as a freshman. He's a close friend of mine. And there were several other Jews. But I remember we played a doubleheader at the Garden, and Yeshiva played. This is in 95, 96. And the Yeshiva played before us. And my teammates were giving me grief because the kippahs, they have that pin that keeps it in place. And guys were like, yo, if one of your boys drops a pin and I trip on it, that's on you, Godly, because I know how they feel about us Catholics, right? But a lot of it is, you know, just people don't know. They don't understand. It's really interesting to be, you know, the world's oldest religion and to have such a lack of kind of knowledge of what Judaism represents, what Jewish people are like. In your experiences, because at the D3 level, you have some incredible institutions, you have some state institutions, you have a lot of Christian schools as well. What's it like being the Jewish school?
It's different on a lot of levels, you know, and obviously we've kind of changed the rhetoric over the last few years where, you know, I think, if social media obviously is a lot newer of an explosion over the last few years than even it was, you know, 10 years ago. But if you would have, you know, been looking at social media 10 years ago, I'm not sure people would have been talking about, you know, Jewish ballers and using terms for, you know, those Jews can play and stuff like that. And we're seeing a lot of that on social media. Some of it's, you know, fun and positive and nice, but then obviously you have the other end of the spectrum where there's a lot more exposure. There's also a lot more anti-Semitism. Sure. But I think it's, you know, I think every school in Division III has something unique about it. And this is kind of what our, you know, what our thing is, obviously being, you know, the Jewish university and, you know, our guys are, you know, they find themselves representing something that's a little bigger than the school. And I think we've seen that in a big way over the last couple of years with the, you know, obviously the amount of exposure, but the amount of support, the amount of people kind of calling from all different backgrounds, and a lot of different places, you know, even geographically to kind of show support. And even if they're not, you know, observant or Orthodox, you know, reaching out and saying, hey, you know, we're kind of proud to watch you guys. And, you know, we're putting on your games. And I get like DMs on social media all the time, people sending pictures, watching the game that I have never heard of in my life. So it's been kind of a cool thing. And I think it's been a little bit educational also for, you know, I think last week was a great example of that. I know we lost the game, but that game with Illinois Wesleyan, because of what happened around, it was so much bigger than basketball. You know, there's a few hundred people in the Midwest that, you know, learned probably that we're not so scary and maybe we're not controlling the weather.
You know, what's interesting is, so 2 years ago, you had this incredible team, incredible season. Of course, it's cut short. There's no tournament because of COVID. And then UC San Diego was their last year in D2, and they were like 30-1 kind of at the time. For somebody who played here and that has built this, and you had that team, there's three teams that year that you felt like had the dream season. You guys, UC San Diego and San Diego State, right? And you all had it cut short. Now we're like 2 years removed. It's weird. I don't know if you saw this. Rudy Gobert tested positive for COVID. It's like it's like, what year are we in?
Oh, like just now?
Today. Yes. Today.
you just made me feel like the whole season's over.
Crazy, right?
Yeah.
So, okay. So where were you guys when, cause I'll tell you where I was. So I was guest hosting for Cowherd and I was getting ready to go to the Big Ten tournament, which was in, I think, Chicago. And I remember we do these meetings at six, the Cowherd show, you do a, like a hour and a half meeting at 6 a.m. shows at nine. And I remember every day sitting down going like, hey, should we be talking about this COVID, this coronavirus thing? They're like, no, it's bad news. It's not sports. I was like, I don't know, man. I don't feel like this is not good. And then literally the last day, it was a Wednesday, I remember, because I was traveling the next day. I was walking out and I was like, I'm telling you, we got to figure out a way to get this into the show just because we feel like they're the only ones not talking about it. And some, an executive who I'll leave out of this, lower level executive, was like, look, it's sports. Nobody turns on sports to hear about infectious diseases that are in China, that started in China. And I was like, okay. But so then the next day I get up and I'm literally driving to LAX to fly to Chicago to do the Big Ten tournament. And I get a text that says, tournament canceled. And the Big East had a game. If you remember, they played, I think, the first half of their game. And then they called the tournament, right? So where were you during this?
So you brought memories, but I was sitting at the bar at a restaurant, actually. It was, I think, the day before we were heading out. We start early in Division III, where we start ahead of Division I in terms of the tournaments. We had already won our first two round, our first two games, our first, whatever it was, 64 and 32. We had already won those games. They were the ones that were played without any fans. And actually, it's in a weird way, COVID kind of put us on the map a little bit, because we were the first sporting event in America, the Yeshiva game versus WPI on Friday afternoon in the Division III tournament in the first round. We were the first game to be played in America without fans because of the pandemic. And what happened because of that, all the NBA execs, all the Division I execs, everybody tuned in because they wanted to watch Yeshiva play, but they wanted to see what the game was going to look like without fans and how they were going to handle it, kind of going forward if that was the path they were going to take. So, we obviously had two great games in a row, and it kind of put us on the map because so many people saw it. But that next week, I was sitting in a restaurant at a bar watching the game or ESPN or something, and as soon as that news came on, Rudy Gobert tested positive. I turned to the two guys I was with and I'm like, we are not playing. I know we're getting on a bus tomorrow to Virginia, but this is not happening. It's just, we're going to waste our time. And I knew it. The way the world works, I knew we were going to get in the car. I was going to drive 7 hours. I was going to pull up in the parking lot. And as I pulled up, they were going to tell us that we're not playing. And of course, I get in the car the next day. I drive to Virginia, checking Twitter the whole way, see if there's any kind of breaking news from the NCAA. Pull into the parking lot of the hotel in Virginia. Tweet comes out. NCAA cancels all championships. So it was
That feeling?
Surreal. We are. At first, it was very disappointing. Obviously, it was more so the having to tell our guys. I mean, we had a lot of seniors. We had guys who were playing the best ball we've ever played. We were feeling really confident, really good about ourselves. And then you have these guys who have kind of invested, for 4 years, not just in terms of, blood, sweat and tears and practice time and all that, but, these guys are also paying tuition and coming to school to play ball. It's a very, very big investment of their lives to do this and to get to this moment. And this was kind of the first time we were in the national picture. This was that first class that I recruited, that I brought in, that kind of shared this dream, that was going to do this with me. And we were there. We were in the Sweet 16. We were like game plan, ready to go. We were going to win that next game, move on to the eight, and then we got to tell them. It lasted, I would say, less than a week, that disappointment, because you got home after that and people started dying fast. And you kind of turn around and you're like, we were upset about a basketball game, and we kind of got over it real quickly, obviously. And then it really became about trying to find ways to kind of help the community, doing Zooms with different, schools and speeches for different organizations or synagogues, and just trying to kind of give people something like a little uplifting, because the world was nuts. I mean, the economy was in the gutter and obviously people were sick. All of a sudden, the basketball game didn't really matter so much.
Which is amazing because, the teams in San Diego, they'll be like, because they weren't in New York. They didn't see just how bad it was when people were in that close proximity to one another.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think he could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college? Because it ain't Nick.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
What'd you do with your team that whole time? These guys, what'd you guys do?
So our guys went home because school went on to Zoom right away. They had canceled classes. They did everything remote. So our guys, literally some of our guys, took Ubers from the hotel in Virginia to the airport and flew home to California, Florida, wherever they're from. Rest of the guys obviously went back to school and then, you know, kind of made their way home from there. But, that was it. You know, there was nothing else to do. We basically did some Zoom meetings on, you know, with the team, you know, a couple of times a week to just kind of get together and talk. But at that point, the season's over and guys are kind of moving on. So it was kind of this weird, just blank screen ending.
In Division III at Yeshiva, are the guys around all summer or is it different?
It is way different than Division I. It's a way different world. First of all, most Division III schools at this point have full-time coaches. I'm not. I'm a lawyer. So I'm at work all day. You know, we practice at like 6:30 in the morning. I get to the office by about 8:30, 8:45. I'm at my law firm from like 8:45 till whatever time at night. And then if I have games or film sessions or whatever, I'm either back in the school or I'm watching film at home. It's just a very, very different world. In Division III, I think way more than Division I, guys are kind of on their own a lot more in terms of, you know, the need for kind of extra work to get in, you know, getting in the weight room. You know, we have a strength and conditioning coach, but it's, you know, we don't have one for the basketball team. We have one for the program. So, you know, you might be getting an assignment and then you got to get in the weight room. And you got to be self-motivated to go and do it. And it's the same thing in the summers. We have different rules in Division I. We're not actually allowed to get on the court with our guys till October 15th. There's no small group practices. There's no personal training. Nobody knows. And it's a big argument every year that Division III coaches try to make to get more time. But there's, you know, for whatever reason, there's stricter rules and we don't really get our guys in the gym till October.
So when you got your guys finally the next year and you have a shortened season and some guys can come back, you know, they come back, they get that extra year. What do they look like?
Well, last year when we got the guys back, we had seven games. I mean, that was it. And
did you know, you were going to have seven games or like,
so the hope in the beginning was that we were going to at least get a conference season in. And the talk initially was that we would play conference season, no non-conference games, and then have a conference championship. And then obviously winner goes to the NCAA tournament. And then pretty quickly teams started dropping out of the conference. And, you know, the conference was like, okay, now you're allowed to play non-conference games to fill in the, you know, the slots. All of a sudden we were down to like three conference games. So now the conference season was gone and it was all about, hey, schedule whatever the hell you can. And then just hope there's an NCAA tournament and you're able to find the way to qualify. And then, you know, pretty quickly after that, the, Division III NCAA tournament got canceled. And, you know, on top of that, we're, you know, starting off the year practicing with pods on different sides of the gym in masks, trying to run drills without contact. And then it was all about starting to manage the pods based on who had already had COVID, no vaccine, obviously at this point, right? So we're trying to manage who already had COVID in certain pods versus who hasn't, so that if a guy tests positive in one pod, we don't lose too many guys where we might have to cancel a game or forfeit a game or not be able to practice for 2 weeks. And it became a lot more of being a mathematician than it did being a coach, for quite a while. And honestly, I think for our guys, it was a very, very tough and frustrating year. And we don't take it for granted. Obviously, there's a lot of programs and a lot of teams who did not even participate and did not play, which was a shame for their guys. And I give a lot of credit to our institution and a lot of credit to our guys for kind of showing up and finding ways for them to kind of keep it safe and find ways to play. But it was a very difficult and stressful year in that regard.
Well, up until this recent shutdown, right, where you lost the game against Williams and now you yourself contracted COVID. Was this year different? Were you back full or were you guys back in masks? Like what was it like for you?
We were back full. And you know, we're not shut down now at all. We haven't gotten, thank God we haven't gotten shut down at all because of COVID. We're actually just on our natural finals break now.
Wait, so what happened? I thought you guys were supposed to play yesterday. I thought you were supposed to play the fourth.
Oh, no. Okay. So that was not our shutdown though. We were supposed to play on Sunday, actually. Sunday we were supposed to play. That came from the other side. That was not our shutdown. It did work out timing wise for me, obviously, but, we were pretty normal this year. We came into the season, you know, obviously guys have to wear masks, I believe in the buildings, I think at school, but not in the gym when we're on the court. Even on our benches, we didn't have to wear them on the bench, coaches and players until recently. We had fans in the stands at a limited capacity, but you know, I think the number was 70%, which in a small gym like ours is still pretty loud, especially when it's getting packed up every night. So, you know, fans were in masks, but they were still loud. And it was a pretty good, especially considering what last year was like, there was a pretty good sense of normalcy, over the first, you know, 15 games so far of the season. I have to say it's been pretty awesome. A lot of fun.
You mentioned that the class 2 years ago, that was your first class. Was Gabe in that class?
Yes.
Okay. Did you know he was going to be that good? I mean, what was you brought in a class, like, you know, like this is a dude right here.
Yeah, no, we knew. And there's a reason he came in actually halfway through. It was the first year we went to the NCAA tournament. So I guess 5 years ago now. In school history, we were a little bit struggling kind of going into the break and we knew he was coming in halfway through and we were just kind of trying to keep the ship afloat, knowing that we were kind of getting this guy in. And he comes in literally as a freshman halfway through the year and just dominates the conference the rest of the way.
Why doubles.
He did a gap year in Israel and he actually did an extra 6 months. So he was there for about a year and a half and then came back in the second semester. And joined us. And I think we went, I want to say 12-1 down the stretch. I think we lost the first game at the buzzer that he played. And then I think he was a double-double the rest of the way.
It's cr- crazy. I mean, crazy to not be, not just to join as a freshman, but to not be with the team. It's not like he had to be sharp, you know, or he was going twice a day. And then all of a sudden he hops in, he's just a baller. I mean, fair to say that's a guy that could have played at a higher level.
I think so. I think we have probably four or five guys who could have played at a higher level. I mean, obviously we have the kid Terrell, who's getting talked about a ton now and getting, you know, professional looks from a lot of different levels. Gabe, I think had some, you know, Ivy and Patriot League looks coming out of high school. We have a couple of other guys who had Division I looks. We have one guy on our roster who was on a Division I roster for 3 or 4 years and now is here as a grad student. So, you know, I think that's part of the reason that we've had success is we've, you know, been able to recruit a little bit at a higher level than, you know, than our conference or our division in terms of bringing guys in and we brought in the right guys. We brought in guys like Gabe who are winning players who, you know, have high IQs and they play the game the right way.
So what's your personal sale? Like when you sat down with Gabe or his folks, when you're recruiting kids, you know, and they're going to have to pay their own way, you know, and now you're going to be in New York where, you know, there's still lots of restrictions. Things are shut down. What is your sale that's allowed you to build this thing?
Yeah. I mean, part of it is New York City. You know, part of it is, I think the, you know, it's become a lot easier, obviously, once we started winning. You know, it was a lot harder 5-6 years ago to bring guys in when this, you know, we haven't won anything and, you know, you're just trying to kind of sell guys on a dream. But I think, you know, when we're competing for guys, it's an interesting situation. We don't really compete much with other Division III schools. In terms of recruiting, we are usually getting either we're getting guys who are, you know, let's say they're Orthodox Jewish. If they're Orthodox Jewish, they're most likely going to yeshiva if they want to play ball. It's just where they're going to go because it's the easiest opportunity in terms of not worrying about their restrictions and not worrying about, you know, Sabbath and kosher and, you know, they're in New York City and there's Jewish community and all that stuff. So that's pretty much easy. You know, then it's a question of, you know, some of the higher level guys and, you know, whether they're Orthodox or not, and you're competing with Division I schools, you're trying to sell them a little bit on the opportunity to play right away. Now looking at the exposure we've gotten over the last year, I'm sitting here on your podcast and, you know, we've had a number of different articles that have been, pretty out there in terms of exposure for us and you're selling guys on that, on the opportunity, you know, hey, you can go be a mid-major. Maybe you'll play, maybe you won't, you know, maybe you'll even be a starter and get 15 a game. But if you come do it here at 20, 25 a game, you know, ESPN and NBA and then Wall Street Journal and New York Magazine are going to be tweeting about you. So it's, you know, it's an opportunity for guys to kind of have, you know, still a chance to play high level, play right away, maybe not ride the bench at a D1. You know, but I'm very big on telling guys, if D1's your dream, you got to chase it. Like, you know, it's hard to sit here and tell a guy to turn down scholarship money, turn down an opportunity to play Division I if that's their actual dream. But if guys are talking about fit and, you know, wanting to play at a high level, and maybe doing something special and being part of something special, then, you know, there's something to talk about there.
It's really interesting. You know, when I brought you guys up, because I follow you guys, I wouldn't say every game, but I've been following, I've been watching, as I think anybody who's a basketball guy, especially somebody who's Jewish, has, and just like, holy cow, they've become really, really good. And we were talking about the kid that signed at Jackson State and how, you know, it gets misconstrued. And my point is what you're saying, like, look, if your dream is to play, the guys that have succeeded from HBCUs, It wasn't like I chose an HBCU over Alabama, and
right.
It was they were small or they were unseen or for whatever reason they live close and they didn't want to go away from home and they went there, and that there's just a difference in the resource, a great difference in the resource. And obviously the NCAA hurts you guys by not even letting you work with the kids, even if you wanted to, in the off season. But how big a challenge is the resources in terms of, for yeshiva specifically, in terms of what you need to be successful? Obviously not being full-time hurts you.
Yeah.
But what about the rest of the resources?
Yeah, it's a major difference. And I saw it firsthand actually a few years ago my son plays baseball, not basketball, but you know, we went on the kind of recruiting world on that end, you know, for a while on the baseball side, and we were visiting schools and ACC schools and some of the bigger schools in the country, and you see the resources that these schools have. I remember we walked out of a visit at Wake Forest, my son and I, and we were heading back to the airport, and I looked at him, I'm like, you know, if you go pitch at a place like this, there is absolutely no excuse not to get better every single day. Like, there's right. just no excuse. They have a freaking pitching lab with like, they have a room where you can like virtual reality, see the guy you're facing the next day and actually like time your pitches as a hitter. And they have a lab where they put all these electrodes on you and they can tell you exactly where your foot's hitting the mound and at what force. And it's crazy. And like and obviously, you know, you walk into a Division III facility or yeshiva, there's a gym and there's a weight room, and there's a trainer and there's a track. And it's like, hey, you know, figure it out. And by the way, you know, your coach is going to be here for 2 hours in the morning and he's available for you by phone the rest of the day if you need him. But that's kind of it. So, you know, there's definitely a little bit more of a self-motivation factor. And by the way, there are some Division III schools and we've been to a few of them that have some beautiful facilities.
No question.
Some of the state universities and some of the Midwest, you know, schools have absolutely amazing facilities that probably, you know, rival some D1 facilities, probably are nicer than some Northeast D1 facilities as you go out west. But it varies. And there's no doubt the amount of attention and the amount of time that is, you know, invested in the athlete at the Division III level is probably less. And I think that's a credit, obviously, you know, certainly a credit to the Division III athlete. They have to be self-motivated to get themselves to a certain level. You know, I look at our guys and I look at a kid like Ryan Terrell, who has really put himself on the map nationally in a big way, to a point where, you know, we have NBA scouts at games and we have obviously, you know, foreign scouts at games and people are looking at him for the next level. And this is a kid who does not have a full-time college coach working with him every day, has hit the weight room on his own, spends his off seasons working his ass off, getting stronger, hitting the weight room, you know, doing drills. And he has really, really put himself out there, which I think is a cool thing.
What kind of lawyer are you, by the way? What kind of law do you practice?
I do commercial real estate. I have a firm with a partner actually here on Long Island.
Are you as good a realtor as you are a basketball coach?
I hope I'm a better real estate lawyer than I'm a basketball coach, because I make a lot more money doing real estate than I do doing basketball.
Still, I mean, so how do you balance that? I mean, I looked, don't get me wrong. Like, I've thought of like, dude, all I do is a radio show. If I didn't do the games, like, what, you know, could I do it at a D3 level? Like, how do you mentally balance it with, cause as a former player, I know you're, and as a longtime coach, I know you're like this. You get done playing a game and you're seeing it over and over in your head, right? Oh, you don't even need to watch it. Like, you can see it 15 times over, but like, you have a job, you have a whole other life, you know? How do you balance what's going on in your brain and what you actually got to focus on?
It's interesting. So it's not easy. First of all, there's a lack of sleep for 6 months of the year. That's for sure. But it's funny that people talk about pregame nerves and what it's like the day. Somebody asked me recently in an interview, what's my days like leading up to the games? How do I handle my nervous energy throughout the day? If I have an 8 o'clock game at night, and the answer is simple. I don't have that issue because I am at work and I'm busy and I'm dealing with clients all day and I'm jumping into the car, checking ways to make sure that there's not too much traffic for me to leave my office at a certain time and get to the game, you know, an hour and a half before the game starts and, you know, not have to worry that if there's traffic, I won't get there till a half an hour before. I'm so focused on, you know, kind of the day by day, you know, dealings at work that it takes that whole dynamic out of it. And in general, I think it's just like that. It's, you know, there's, you learn how to kind of, you know, just compartmentalize different, you know, different parts of your day. So I know that when I'm at work, I'm focused on my clients, on my deals, on my papers and whatever I'm working on. And I know when I'm at practice in the morning, and that's why I love that we have practice in the morning, you know, it's great to kind of get out of bed and, you know, I mean, it sucks waking up at 5 o'clock, but you get there at 6:30 of the gym and they're yours for like an hour and a half, 2 hours. And you're just purely focused on that before the rest of the day starts. And it's just, you know, it's a nice start to the day and a nice opportunity to kind of teach and get these guys prepared and then kind of go focus on my day at work and then deal with film at night. It just becomes kind of a, you know, a little bit of a juggling of different things. You know, my father used to say it all the time. You want to find somebody to get something done for you. You find the busiest person and ask them because they know how to manage time. And I think something I've learned over the last few years for sure is how to manage time.
That's amazing. Are you a coffee guy in the morning? Like what's your, you get up, it's 5 a.m. is when your alarm goes off?
Yeah.
Okay. So then you homebrew or do you stop at the same place every day?
No, I usually either do it on the machine at home or it depends on my mood. Sometimes I'll try to stop by a Dunkin' or a Starbucks on the way. I'm not like particular about my coffee,
you're not?
But I'm not like a OCD guy at all. So at least in that regard, I am in a million other ways, but with my coffee, it's like, as long as I have it, I don't really care. You know, okay. What it is? I don't like the taste of it. I just feel like I need it.
Well, yeah, coffee is a lot like plain tea. I have a buddy who's from the South, and he often says plain tea has one purpose in life, to be sweetened. And I believe that coffee is the same thing. Black coffee has one purpose in life, and that's to be sweetened, right? But do you go black? You just go – that actually probably would cut down your coffee intake. You just go black coffee.
That probably would, you know, I don't really drink that much. I really have one cup in the morning and that's it. Occasionally, if I'm just feeling it during the day, at some point in the middle of the day, I'm getting that drag, I'll have a second cup. But I'm definitely a milk guy. I used to be like a two sugar guy. I'm down to kind of one or half. You know, I've worked my way down. I don't know that I'll ever get down to the black coffee, but we're certainly trending that direction.
Okay. How restrictive is it with some of the orthodox guys in terms of the difficulty in getting them every day there? And because they have, there's other things as part of their religion that they have to do.
So it's obviously a lot easier at yeshiva just because the school is built around it. And our schedule is built around it. So, you know, we don't have games that are scheduled Friday night or Saturday afternoon. Our games would be, you know, Thursday night or Saturday night or Sunday. So, you know, we're kind of built a little bit around that. It makes it a lot easier. But there are, you know, different challenges, right? We have a dual curriculum. We have guys who are doing Talmud and rabbinic studies that are maybe, you know, spending a little bit more of their day, you know, than a regular student athlete is at another school. And then you have the kind of, you know, in our world, for some reason, guys all get married at, you know, 20, 21, 22. And, you know, half these guys that are, you know, calling me up, hey, do we have practice this night? I have a wedding. And then, oh, I have another wedding next Sunday. And then I have a wedding on Tuesday. And, you know, and then we're dealing with the whole wedding schedule. But there's, you know, in terms of the holidays and kind of the differences in general from the religious aspect, it's already built in based on the school. It's kind of the outside things that we're kind of managing a little bit more that, you know, probably a lot of people don't have to deal with.
The best coach in Division III that nobody knows about, that we wouldn't, we're going to take yourself out of the argument, that you go against this guy, you watched him and you're like, man, that guy's so good.
So and that's tough because now, right, everyone in my conference is going to watch this. And then there's a guy.
Because Maker was at Williams and it didn't work at Marist, right? But I mean, he was killing it at Williams. But again, you know, at the end of the day, it does come down to players as much as plays, but there has to be somebody that you'd be like, you know what, that guy is really, really good.
So I'll tell you, there's at Mount St. Mary's up in Newburgh, Ryan Kadlebowski does a great job. And he's a guy that I've, you know, we've played over the years, and regardless of what their talent level is over the years, and they've had some years, they've been very good, and some years where they just have not had a lot of talent. We just always have a tough time. They prepare so, he does such a good job preparing for us. And I just feel like every time we win a game, especially up there, but in general, when we're competing against them, every time we win a game, I always walk out feeling like, man, I got to find a way to do a better job. That game shouldn't have felt like that. And then obviously when we lose, we walk out of there and be like, I got to figure out how to prepare like that guy. I think he does a really good job. His teams play hard and they just have no quit no matter what's going on in the game.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game, King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of that.
Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came out from crying tears. Crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. And then he's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college because it ain't it?
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Do your guys cuss in Hebrew so that they don't get technical fouls?
No, they're not shy. They cuss in English like everybody else.
I know, but if you curse in Hebrew, they can't catch you.
We used to have that when I was playing. We had a few Israelis on the team, and they used to like to try to call the plays in Hebrew. Definitely cursed in Hebrew. It was a different world. Now it's not as much. Now guys aren't shy.
You know what's funny about the Hebrew thing is, and when you play in Israel or when you live in Israel, you go there. Like all of a sudden you'll have people that you're having a conversation and they'll break and they know you don't speak Hebrew. They break into Hebrew. So you're lost in the conversation. Like, whoa, what are they talking about? Like, they're probably talking about you.
That's right.
Right.
Probably yeah, that's true. And it's funny. I spoke pretty good Hebrew growing up and I actually spent the gap year in Israel and I was pretty good at it, but it's kind of a little bit lost on me lately. And I don't have it as well as definitely as much as I used to, but I remember on those Maccabiah trips, we were there. Same idea. You know, we had all these guys, they never heard a word. And, you know, all of a sudden you're meeting the Israeli contingent and they're like, the conversation starts off, you know, they speak English. And then all of a sudden they break into Hebrew. Like, yeah, we know you're talking about us.
Exactly. It's exactly what takes place. You mentioned you guys have this natural break now, right? And you don't play again, I think, till the 26th, if everything goes as planned.
Right.
So, does that mean when they're off, when do you get them back and start training with them again?
We're bringing them back. Or, I mean, it's early, but it's not early enough, but we're bringing them back on the 19th. So we'll probably get about 5 practices in before our first game. And then we get kind of right into it. We play, I think, every 2 to 3 days after that for the next like 3-4 weeks.
What's the craziest reason behind a guy not making it back from home that you've been given?
Probably a guy waiting for his sister to have a baby.
Okay. Yeah. It's like, it's not really a thing, dude. Like you got to kind of, but you can't say it, but you gotta feel it, right? Like,
Like, yeah, maybe get on the plane and come back to practice, and then, you know, you can go back there and, you know, if you need to for a day or whatever it is, but you know, maybe
it's not your baby.
Just wait.
Your baby.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that was one of the
weird ones. Did he have to stay for the Bris? Is that what he had to stay for as well? I gotta stay for the Bris.
Yeah. I think that as well, yeah. But that's the thing. Like, I don't think they knew if it was gonna be a boy or a girl, so it's kind of like you're waiting for a couple of days or you're waiting for 2 weeks. We don't know yet.
Toughest venue to play in?
Toughest place to play for us has probably been Farmingdale State.
Where's that?
On Long Island. It's Long Island, Farmingdale. It's a little bit out east on Long Island. They're a conference team, big rivalry usually. Both teams have been very good over the last few years. We've seen each other, I think, in the conference championship or playoffs, I think, each of the last 3 or 4 years.
What's the gym like?
It's big. You know, ours is like a bandbox. Theirs is like a, you know, a little more of an arena style gym, big, you know, bleachers on both sides. It's like an old airport hangar and it's pretty new.
Yeah, looking at it. It's really weird. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's weird. And does it have a tartan floor or is that a wood floor?
No, like I think now that I'm thinking about it, I can't even remember. I think it's wood, but it's not, it happens to be a nice gym. We just, for whatever reason, we, you know, we struggle there. And I mean, a lot of it has to do with them being good too.
The championship this year is where? D3 championship is where?
I believe it's Indiana.
Yeah, so are they bringing all the championships to one yet, or is that
so coming? That was what the goal was 2 years ago when things got canceled. I think they're back to that, but I'm not 100% sure. I try very hard not, and I know it's cliche as hell, but I try very hard not to look that far ahead. I try so hard to not even like look at the dates, or I don't even know when the Final Four is.
It's in New Orleans. I didn't even realize until recently it's in New Orleans. So now if you guys go to Indiana, are you going to take them to the Hoosiers gym?
That would be a cool trip for us. I mean, if that's where it is, I don't even remember for sure. I could totally be off on where it is, but if that's where it is, that's probably something I would try to do with them.
That's amazing, really. That obviously you don't know where it is. Like, I'm not trying to give you shit.
I could care. I purposely don't ever look. Like, I just am not. I don't, like, if you ask me right now when our conference playoffs were, I have no idea. I'm not up to it.
What would it mean to you personally to lead your alma mater with an all Jewish team to a D3 national title?
Yeah, that would be obviously the dream. That would be pretty cool. You know, it's not so much about what it would mean to me as much as what it would mean to these guys, and not even just the guys that we have right now. It's the guys we had 2 years ago who kind of, you know, we had a couple of guys 2 years ago who graduated. They didn't just pave the way. They bought into what I wanted to do. Like when I said to them, when I was recruiting, like, hey, mediocrity is not going to be the goal anymore. Like we're not going to celebrate being 500. We're going to put ourselves on the map. We're going to win our conference. We're going to go to the NCAA tournament, and we're going to win games and compete for a national championship. And, you know, whereas most people laugh, like even in my interview, when I interviewed for the job at YU and I kind of laid that out, people looked at me like I was crazy. A couple of guys were like chuckling, and I was dead serious about it. And, there were a couple of guys that I recruited that were seniors that year who were like, yeah, coach, that's what we're going to do. We're coming there to do that. That's what we're going to do. And, you know, that's kind of, you know, snowballed for us, you know, to where we've, you know, built the team that we have now, that kind of grew out of that. And I think to see those guys, if I get to see those guys react to being in that situation, that'll mean everything to me.
Do you have any desire to be the full-time coach, or do you like this setup?
I do kind of like this setup. It's, you know, I love my law practice. I have good clients. I like dealing with them. There is a part of me that likes the fact that this is a passion. It's something I love doing. I love coaching. I could do it at the high school level. I could do it at the college level. It doesn't make a difference where I am. I've always loved doing it. And you know, there's a part of me that likes the fact that it's, you know, a passion and something that I'm able to do, you know, call it on the side as much as it's, you know, we call it part-time. It's full-time hours and a part-time job. But, you know, there's a part of me that likes that balance to life and having different things to focus on. You know, it doesn't mean I would, you know, at some point be against it, but it's something that I really enjoy, that balance right now.
when somebody plays your teams, what do you think they walk away saying?
I hope they walk away saying that, you know, that's the most selfless team we've ever played against. Like, those guys share the ball. Those guys help each other on defense. And those guys are really out there for each other, because that's really what we preach. And it's kind of the way our guys live. And I think it's really what's made us successful over the years, is that, you know, we've had some really good players. We have some great players right now. And there's not a single one of them that wouldn't give up numbers to get more letters.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing on how, when I told people I was going to have you on, how everyone knows, and not just like Jewish basketball players, like everyone knows, it's become a thing. Like, I had no idea that they were that good. And it's only really been the last 3-4 years where you would say you're on the map. It hasn't been so then the goal is not just to be competitive, but to be consistent, right? Mm-hmm. What's the challenge in that? Like, you mentioned, it's about bringing the right kind of guys in. The good thing is the pool of players doesn't really change, but there can be some really talented guys that maybe don't fit into how they're not your OKGs, your kind of guys. How do you build it so you consistently win? What's the secret?
And we've had that issue over the years. We've had guys that we thought were really, really talented who wanted to come here that we've turned away. And we've seen some of them go Division I. And they're that talented. We didn't think they were winning players, or we didn't think they fit into what we were doing from an attitude perspective.
You said, sorry for interrupting. You said winning players, and I love that. But my belief in winning players might be different than yours. What are you looking for? What signifies a winning player?
A winning player is to me is an attitude. It's you know, look, there's always got to be talent. You know, you want guys who can put the ball in the basket. You want guys who can get stops defensively, but you want guys who walk to the bench in a certain way. You want guys who sit on the bench in a certain way. You want guys who act on the court a certain way outside of the basketball stuff, right? So it's how they talk to their teammates. When I watch film, even when we're watching our own games, we're not just watching the game, and right? And not even just the typical, I'm watching how players react on the bench to see who's kind of pissed off they're not in the game versus supporting their teammates. Even how guys are on the court, like, I love to see on the court, for example, when, you know, Gabriel Eifer, who is, you know, almost averaging a triple double and could probably score 20, 25 a game if he wanted to, and is averaging about 10 a game this year, you know, he'll be sitting in the post and, you know, one-on-one situation, but pointing over his shoulder to the guy behind him because he's about to go set a back screen for that guy. He's not going to get an assist, a rebound, or a point on that play. But he's pointing to where he wants the ball to go because he sees ahead of what's going to happen in terms of how the defense is set. And he goes and screens a guy for a basket. That's a winning player. And you don't have to be his level to be a winning player. We've had guys who nobody has heard of. I had a guy named Tyler Hode who played for me for 4 years, who graduated 2 years ago. Excuse me. And, you know, Tyler, not the most talented player in the world, one of the hardest working kids I've ever been around. He started off the year when he was a sophomore. It was the first year we went to the NCAA tournament. It was about 4 years ago. Starts off the year, literally one of our last players off the bench. Did not play a single game minute the first 5-6 games of the year. Kept working in practice to a point where I was like, I got to throw this guy in a game and see what happens. Ended up being a starter in the Skyline Championship, in the conference championship game, and in the NCAA tournament for us. He was just a winning player. He was just a kid who did the right things on the court. And it had nothing to do with stats. He just always did the right things and acted the right way. And sure enough, in the semifinal game 2 years ago before the pandemic at home, up three with under 30 seconds left, he ends up defending their best player or their best shooter. And the kid goes into the classic, Dwayne Wade, James Harden pump fake from three to get you up in the air and try to get, you know, draw the foul. And being a winning player in the right spot, right place, right time, Tyler kind of just stood his ground. Kid jumped into him. He ends up taking a charge. We win the game. So, you know, it's guys like that. It's more than talent. It's more about kind of how you project on the court and off. And those are the guys we want to get, because those are the guys we can teach them what we're doing, and we'll find enough guys to make shots. But if we have guys like that, you know, especially when there are talented guys and our skill guys, we feel like we'll be in a really good spot.
Elliot, I hope you feel better. Nobody likes being sick, right? I mean, obviously COVID bad enough, but just the idea of being sick is just, you know? And I cannot wait to see what you guys look like, hopefully on the 26th. And I gotta come see you guys play. You guys have officially become a thing.
I appreciate that. And definitely let me know when you get there. I'll get some parking. You definitely need it up there.
Yeah, I would guess. Thank you so much for joining me and feel better.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you having me.
Well, that was awesome. What a fascinating look. We'll continue to bring you the best, the most interesting people in all of sports on the Doug Gottlieb Show, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific, on your iHeartRadio, iHeart app, FoxSportsRadio.com, Fox Sports Radio, SiriusXM 217 or 203. A lot to get to. In the meantime, remember, we're going to keep bringing you the best college basketball, NBA, high school basketball, legends. Tell a friend about it. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.